topic today is building a Beit HaKnesses, is building a shul. The sixth parsha, the pasuk says Vasali Mikdash, and the Zayra says that this pasuk Vasali Mikdash is not only referring to the Beit HaMikdash, but it's referring to even the Mikdash Ma'at, even the Beit HaKnesses. So Beit Knesset is called the Mikdash, and therefore a person would be mekayim the mitzvah of Vasali Mikdash, and a person would build a Beit HaKnesses. Interestingly enough, there's actually a sheet that holds there's an isser in Parshas Re'eh of talks about destroying the Mizbeach of Avodah Zorah. It says, "Well, Sasu Ken L'Hashem Elokechem, you cannot do the same to Hashem." So the Chazal Darshan, there's an isser to be noitates an Evan from the Mizbeach, to take any damage to the Mizbeach in the base of Mikdash. There's going to be a lav in the Torah. It's part of the Isser of Losasun Kain, which is also the same source of the Isser of the shrine, anything written in the Shem's name. It's also because it says, you be about to Mishmom, Losasun Kain. It makes a whole list of how you destroy the Vodazora. Don't do that to Hashem. So there's a Prima God, which brings a sheet that says when a person has an opportunity to build, and he doesn't take advantage of that, he prevents other people from building, he has equivalent status as if he destroyed and is over this from the titzah. B'shei baltasa. You're in Malchus, keeping over B'shei baltasa. You're transgressing by not doing, so you don't get punished by that, but the level of Isser moves up.
Not clarify, does he get in the way, or he just doesn't support it?
He doesn't support it, and therefore they don't build. You know, let's say
doesn't give money, he had money.
Right, if he had an opportunity to be if he would have been able to facilitate that, he doesn't do so. Mm-hmm. So he's zapped with a Isser of as if he destroyed.
Mm-hmm. Wait, at what point does he get like the responsibility to be...
So the halacha says that If you have a city which has no shul in it, there's a responsibility to build a shul, and the members of the city have a power, there's authority to force everybody to join. So everybody has to join in to build, to help with the building. We'll discuss exactly how you divide that in a second. If there's already a shul in the town, the question is building a second shul, so it gets a little more sticky. So if that's going to cause divisiveness and division in the city, then we don't encourage that. If they're already divided and etc., this is if anything is going to help create peace, because at least we'll get the two groups away from each other, then we do encourage that. If it's a large city already, and so by building another shul in a different part of the town, it'll facilitate more people coming to davening because it'll be closer, etc., so we encourage that as well. So that would be, even though theoretically everybody can still fit into the main shul, but if you can build in a different neighborhood and that'll facilitate more people coming to davening, it goes back into this responsibility to build. Okay. How do you divide the responsibility? So there really are two ways to build a shul. There's the basic way to build a shul, you know, speak to the oratory guys, right? Right? And then there's an union of hider to make it look beautiful. So the basic amount, everybody has responsibilities, and we divide that not according to a person's financial ability, but according, everybody has to give something. We divide that equally amongst all people. That which the people which are more wealthy would like to make the shul look nicer, that you divide according to financial ability. So if the people who have more money have more responsibility to give, etc. So we divided sometime partially the fee nefashas according to the amount of people, partially the fee moment according to the amount of money that people have. If, however, that halacha, if you're building beyond the basic amount and you're using this power of authority to actually collect from people against their will, make them pay, collect them against the will for a part that is beyond the basic amount of money they need, it's considered gzela, actually, to take that money from them. Because you can't force them to contribute that. They say, we don't need the fancier type of shul.
So this money presumably comes out of somebody's Meister account. How does that fall within the Meister priority? Does this all of a sudden leap over the other near-term family priorities?
So, in general, it does not. It does not override stalker, but it is a fee. It does... It's not any situation of stalker will override it. There's definitely, in the hierarchy of things, this is part of your financial responsibility. Mm-hmm. The once you can the halacha says that the status of a Beis HaMedrash, where people learn, has a higher level of kedusha than the status of a Beis HaKnesses, where people don't learn there. Or if they learn there, but not on a regular basis, they'll have, let's say, an hour in the morning, an hour at night, as opposed to it's used constantly throughout the day. So the level of a Beis HaMedrash is a higher level of kedusha. And the assumption of the halacha is if I can force you to build a Beis HaKnesses, I can therefore also force you to build a Beis HaMedrash. You can do both in one shot, but if for whatever reason that wasn't done, it's not working. So you would have you could force them to build a Beis HaMedrash as well. You could also, if you got responsibility of purchasing svarim, which are necessary to be able to learn from, also as part of the authority which we have. To now, nowadays we don't have a kehila structure which allows us to force people to pay. So it's going to be done based on people's goodwill. You can shepherd them as much as you want, but you can't actually. But they actually have authority. They would actually go collect money. They would use. It's like the IRS is coming. You know, so I don't want to pay. That's very nice, but we're going to take from you whether you like it or not. So it was a full.
They know how much money each person had.
They were pretty good at it. Yeah.
There are various proxies you can consider.
No, they lived in a village, you know. They know everybody knew about everything about everybody. So, okay. So, can you accept donations from non-Jews for the purpose of building a shul? And the answer is yes. You can accept, but interestingly enough, but a person who is a mummer. To mechal Shabbos means he knowingly knows that it's prohibited to transgress Shabbos. And thus, so anyway, the halacha says you cannot take from him. The question nowadays we confer the status of people which are not, they don't really understand the this, etc. But living in a go back 200 years ago, everybody knew about Shabbos, and there's people who chose against the halacha not to keep Shabbos. Those you will not accept donations from.
Isn't there a pasuk in Ezra? I think it says Lo Lachem Belanu Livnos Bais Lachem Elokim, something to that effect.
That's referring to over there the Shomronim, and the issue over there was more a question of not only a question of they were first of all what their status was, whether Jewish or not, that's questionable. Come on, they were even Jewish. Mm-hmm. Their Geras was a Geri Emes. We pass on the Geri Emes. Mm-hmm. But the problem was that they were. The fact that they were Jewish made it worse. Mm-hmm. Okay. There is a tshuva from the Sefer Kinyan Torah, Kinyan Torah Kilchosoy, which he says that if, however, you have a person who, sometimes people donate money because they want to swash their guilt. You know, okay, you know, listen, I don't keep the mitzvahs, but as long as I contribute to the synagogue, I'm okay, right? So he actually contemplates the possibility that in that situation it would be prohibited to take the money from them, because by doing so you're facilitating their sinning. He said, listen buddy, nobody can take any of your money, you know, either do tshuva, because you can't buy your way into heaven, because nobody's going to accept your money. Maybe he would do tshuva, but now that he can buy his way into heaven, he's not doing tshuva, he's just trying to buy his way into heaven. So he actually contemplates that you would be consider it a lif na'iver, you're facilitating a veira by accepting his donation. Which, if you know some people like that, you can understand that he's not so far off. And that is maybe our generation, not so much anymore. Some of the lachos of how to build a shul, so interestingly enough, which we don't really, you know, we'd sort of fallen away, the lachos of the shul has to be built in the highest place in the city. It's supposed to be the highest building in the city. And if somebody else would actually build a house which is higher than the shul, the halacha is we can force him to actually knock off that part of his house.
Does that mean the base or the top?
Top.
So the top has to be taller than every other structure in
right.
the city. But the base could actually be on a lower point. It just reaches up very high.
Right. So if you want to build a skyscraper, right? You can build a skyscraper in the valley, right? And the top of the skyscraper will be an eye level with your shul. That's fine. But if the top of your if the skyscraper is right next to the shul and it's dwarfing your shul, you got a problem. Now, in Europe, that wasn't. It became this halacha became irrelevant because they lived amongst the goyim and they had no power to maintain the height of the shul over that of what the goyim were doing. The question is, why don't we have this in Eretz Yisrael? Mm-hmm. You would have this reality of, I mean, there's a shul in every corner, so now what? Which shul do you measure it by? So it seems to be whatever reason that this halacha is not enforced anymore. And the person actually grapple with, why not? Why isn't this? Okay. In regards to there is a hit or mitzvah that the shul should build as beautifully as possible. I remember I had an interesting emotion about it. I was in Chicago. I'm going to say this like 1981, and there is a school there called the Spurtis College of Judaic Studies. They also have a museum. I went down to the museum when I was there to visit. And they had various different artifacts from different shuls all over the world. And there's some really beautiful things. And it's just like this tremendous emotion of, you see how much the Jews want to beautify their shul. We were in, last summer we were in the Israel Museum. Last summer? 2 summers ago? A year and a half ago. We were in the Israel Museum, and the same thing. They have these shuls all over the world. They're gorgeous. They made these beautiful shuls. Klal Yisrael makes beautiful. We do it in a beautiful way. But the Rabbi Yehuda says there's no actual architectural plan of how you're supposed to build a shul. But that being said, a person starts taking the plans, the way they build. The other religions build their temples, that's already problematic. He says they're doing it in order to be like them. So he quotes a pasuk in Hosea, the pasuk says. So they forgot the one who created them, and they build the temples. So that's the simple reading over there, was not referring to the temples for Avodah Zarah. So you shouldn't change the minhag. That being said,
what defines building it like they build it?
So again, the question is, his point is, if you're doing it, that's the reason why you're doing it. Mm-hmm. So a famous question which comes up is, the Rama says that the bima is supposed to be placed in the middle of the shul. Mm-hmm. It's supposed to be placed by Emso. Now, Be'emso, the person can say that it means in the middle, it doesn't mean it's supposed to the side. You can put it to the side if that works out better. It means it's posed up in the front. So in the time of the Chassam Sofer already, the people who were reforming Judaism, they wanted to look like the non-Jewish churches, which they have their bima equivalent, their altar, whatever it is, up in the front. So they wanted to move the bima up to the front. So Sam Sofer wrote a very long, responded very strongly against that. Maria Saad, the Ramshik, all of these people were fighting the war against reform. That would be, doing it to be like the Goyim, but going to Isurim, etc. And so you can't do that.
But in terms of like stained glass windows and vaulted ceilings and that kind of stuff.
It doesn't seem to be that's, if the goal is that it should look beautiful, it'll look beautiful. If you feel that this is something which is beautiful, you happen to see it there. But the goal is you want to be like the Goyim. Like there's no mile of having in the front versus the middle, just because the bulb will be more like. Give it more of a temple feel. That's a problem. If you did build it like that, so the Marsham says it doesn't make it also to enter into, assuming that everything else is being done over there according to halacha. Mm-hmm. There's a question about the correct way to build the place where the chazan stands. There's a Makan Rama says that it should be lower. Because the Gemara talks about Yorad Lifnei Ateva, the person who will go down to where the Shliach Tzibur would go be Yorad Lifnei Ateva. So apparently, the place where the Chazan stood was lower. Interestingly, there's a Beis Yosef. That's a Magen Avraham and Hilchos Tefillah talked about the Chazan going down. So he says that they would make it lower.
Is that because of Mamakim Kasi Hashem?
Because of Mamakim, yeah. There's a Beis Yosef who says that because there were different steps in the process, and they would go up, the bima they dealt with was a raised bima, that's why it's called a bima. So it was a raised platform. So the chazan would come down off of the bima for Shemoneh Esrei. You're not supposed to stand in a high place for Shemoneh Esrei. So he went down, back down to the regular floor, he says. That's why it's called Yarid. It doesn't mean that he went lower. He just went back to the regular floor off of the bima, which was raised.
What was he doing on the bima, though?
Because the parashah Lashma was done on the bima, the isser of standing high applies to Shemoneh Esrei. So that's how the Beis Yosef explains that.
Wow.
So it's interesting, like, you know, yeah, it's a fair sugar warrior, the Fantava, everybody knows that. You know, why doesn't everybody do it? Because the Beis Yosef has a different understanding of the proper place to place the chazan. So where can the chazan stand? So Rashi has an interesting shuba where he says, you know, our minhag is the chazan stands by the yom, and can we move the chazan to stand by the bima? So people have raised the question that that's, you know, and not the Jewish way of doing it, etc. So Mersha has a tshuva where he says that that's not correct. Actually, you see back from the time of the Rishonim, actually that's where the chazan stood. As long as the place was dalet 4 amos by 4 amos, so a chazan, it's not considered too small a place for a person to stand for Shemoneh Esrei, right? And he would stand there. At some point after the Rishonim, it was actually moved. That the Omen became a different place. That's why we don't have a specific place to put the Omen. You'll see some shuls that have it in front of the Oren, to the right of the Oren, to the left of the Oren, because there's no specific place to put it. It's not discussed in Allah where to put the Omen. Mm-hmm. But he says, but since that became the minhag nowadays, you shouldn't change it unless there's a need. So if you have the question which he was dealing with was that two shuls had merged, and now, because it was a much larger crowd, it was very difficult to hear the chazan unless the chazan stood on the raised bima, which they had in the middle of the shul, that allowed them to be heard better by the whole tzibur. So Rashi says that's a valid need. So that would be valid to do that.
Why does, and this might be separate, but why does the chazan say about the bima for Kabbalah Shabbos?
The reason why the chazan says the bima for Kabbalah Shabbos actually is the opposite, because historically, Kabbalah Shabbos is not part of Tefillah. It was added in the time of the 1500s. In Sfas, etc., you know, the Bala Kapola, the Rizal, etc., in the 1400s, introduced this idea of saying special Pitach in honor of Shabbos. It started spreading, but in order to indicate that it was not part of the regular Tefillah, they would not daven by the regular Omid. They would daven not by the regular Omid. Now that the regular Omid had moved to the front, so he would stand somewhere else, and then when time came time for Marv, he'd go back to the Omid and daven by the Omid, which was the real place to daven. That's why we actually daven Kabbalah Shabbos not in the regular place. Which according to Marv is interesting, because really it was the regular place, it became not the regular place. You're supposed to have windows in the shul. Specifically, windows facing towards where the people in the middle of davening, the lach is the person should not look outwards. But if a person feels he needs like a boost to his Yir Shemayim, so he looks up to the heaven, that helps him get a boost. So you should have windows available. There's also there's some inyan of having windows there. It's brought down that it preferably should be 12 windows. Some are the 12 windows, and some are connecting to the shvatim because there's 12 shvatim. That wasn't the reason why there's 12 windows. It's a pikabola, there's supposed to be 12 windows, not because of the 12 shvatim.
That's in the base midrash or the entire shul? For shul is multiple rooms.
No, it means in the place where you're davening.
Okay.
The shul preferably should be facing in the direction that you're going to be davening. You should put the Oren Kodesh in that direction. Therefore, people will not get into the quandary to face to the Oren versus facing towards Yerushalayim. So depending where you are, if you're north of Yerushalayim, you would put the Oren on the wall facing south, because you're supposed to be davening south. If you'd be to the east Yerushalayim, you put on the western wall. If you'd be where we are, you put on the eastern wall. So we should set up the Bir Lach, the Mishnah Berurah, in two places discusses when you have this conflict where they didn't do that, and the Oren is facing in a different direction than Mizrach. Should you daven towards the Oren, or should you daven towards Mizrach? Interestingly enough, the Mishnah Berurah seems to say that you should daven towards Mizrach, not towards the Oren. But you can't daven in such a way that your back is to the Oren. So you can never put the Oren on the west wall. You know, you can have either north or south, you know, and then you should still daven towards Mizrach. You should try and be mitzad in such a way that it doesn't look like you're totally ignoring the Oren. Okay, now, when you face it towards Mizrach, it should be faced in such a way that it's not directly towards the sunrise. because you're not supposed to daven directly towards the minhag of the goyim, was they would daven towards the rising of the sun. It should be a little bit off from direct east, so therefore it would be more towards that, based on where the sun will be midday. This is the east direction of east, because the sun moves through the sky, and, you know, in such a way that you would measure your definition of east based where the sun is in the middle of the day.
But really, depending on the season, the sun is.
Yeah. Yes, so that's a good question. That's a very good question. I don't have a good answer to that question. That's what it says in Halacha, how you apply that lemaisa. The truth is that that the circle of the sun in midday, it's a question of higher or lower in the sky, but generally it's either going to go like this around the horizon or like this around the horizon. But you get to that point, right? So it's either here or there, but it's basically in the same, it's in the same vis-a-vis the directions of northeast and south, it's basically the same. It's a question, is it further lower, closer to the horizon or not?
Well, when the sun's at its zenith, you're essentially going to be facing south, or exactly 90 degrees off east.
What is this?
By the time the sun's at its peak in the sky,
right? So you don't face towards that. You're right, exactly. You take that and you measure east based on that. Which
okay,
is
you measure
off.
East based. I've got it.
Right.
So you're 90 degrees off of that point.
Right. It says that we set up. There is actually brought down a halacha that they have having the kohanim sit on the mizrach. It says that the tzaddik should sit on the right. You put him on the right of the Aron Kodesh. So. By us, we put the Rashiva on the right, put the Rav on the right. Some shall put the Rav on the left. That's a different issue. Okay. It's not Ma'akiv. So the question was, where were these Sakadim sitting? Were they sitting with their back towards the Oren Kodesh? So that's not proper either. They were sitting on the Mizrach Mount to the side of it. It's not called having their back towards it. There's one shul that I know, which the shul is not facing east, but the Zkenim have figured out a way when they sit from the front that they can face towards the Aron Kodesh, and they're facing east. We put the Aron Kodesh on the north side, so you're sitting on the front. So the Aron Kodesh is towards north. So instead of davening towards that way, you daven towards Aron Kodesh.
The Aron Kodesh is sticking out.
So you're facing east. Mm-hmm. So. That's why there's some people who daven in that section who are not necessarily the Zkenim, but just it's a better place to daven. You should not put up types of pictures and type of things in the shul because they're going to be distracting, and B, it shouldn't look like you're bowing down towards these pictures of animals, people, whatever it might be. Even putting up sukkim and tefillahs, preferably on the walls, is an issue. Writing it on the walls itself, because they would have to paint the walls eventually. You'd have problems with the lachas of painting over something as equivalent of erasing it, etc. Planting trees in the shul. There's a pasuk which talks about that. In the Beis HaMikdash, it was an issue. Last point over here. This interesting person wants to put it. He wants to donate something to the show. He wants to put his name on it. It's actually the law is that there is a Zohar which says you're supposed to be mefarsim oisei mitzvahs. You're supposed to publicize the person who does a mitzvah. She actually put the name, not of who you would put it in honor of, but the name of the person who gave it. It's more important the name of the person who gave it than the person that is in honor of. So, okay, let's hold it here.